The Horse Race is brought to you by Benchmark Strategies. Benchmark is setting a new standard as Boston's fastest growing public affairs consulting firm. To know more, connect with Benchmark on Twitter at Benchmark Boston. This week on The Horse Race, we've got two brand new MPG polls to discuss and two new MPG polling experts to introduce to our audience. It's Friday, May 26th. Welcome back to The Horse Race, your weekly look at politics, policy, and elections in Massachusetts. I'm Steve Cazella, and my usual co-hosts Lisa and Jen are off this week. But fear not, friends of The Horse Race, I am not alone here in The Horse Race stables. We have a special episode for you today and two very special guests to help us roll through it. So what makes this episode special? Well, as always, many things make our episodes here at The Horse Race special, but the most special thing this week is we'll be talking all about polling. That's right, we've done two new statewide polls. They're both out this week, and we'll be digging into how they were done and what they found. So first, let's meet our guests. Coming to us live, well, not live, but live as you listen to this from Madison, Wisconsin, is MPG Research Director Olivia Wine. Olivia, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And also joining us today in the virtual stables from her home in Waltham, Massachusetts, is Research Manager with MPG, Zaina Basma. Zaina, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me today.
So because neither of you have met our Horse Race audience here before, Zaina, let's start with you. Just give people a little bit of a sense of your background and how you ended up at MPG.
Yeah, so I started at MPG about 2 years ago. I previously was in grad school program and I was a research fellow at MassInc and learned about the polling data that the polling group did. And as soon as the job was open, I applied.
And Olivia, you're joining us from the great state of Wisconsin, obviously one of the best states of the union, as I can personally attest. So give us a sense of what your background is and how you ended up at MPG.
Well, my background is primarily in the nonprofit work. And I went to grad school and I got a master's in public policy at the University of Chicago. And through a series of events, I found MassInc Polling Group and I really loved the work they did. And so I've been with them for just under a year now.
And we have to give a huge shout out to our good friend, Rachel Deck, who has been on this podcast before, for introducing us to Olivia and sending her our way. So thanks, Rachel, wherever you are. I know you're listening. All right. Well, now that we've met our special guests, let's get into talking about the polls. Okay. So now that our audience has gotten to know the cast for this week, let's get into why we're here today on this polling podcast spectacular. So each of you has taken the lead on two new polls that MPG released this week, one on education and one on the COVID vaccine. So we're going to start with the education poll. Zaina, you worked on this one and have been working on this one pretty much since you joined us here at MPG. So before we get into the actual findings of the poll, take us into the Wayback Machine about how this poll started and sort of where this series came from.
Yeah, so this polling process started back in the spring of 2020. It was actually the start of the pandemic. We started on that survey asking about digital equity, access to computers and devices. It was a poll about crisis response, really, during COVID at the start. And then we've continued the poll almost two times a year. And this past spring was our eighth wave of the poll.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of amazing to think of all the different topics that we've covered during that time, you know, and just sort of how it's evolved. You know, now the topics that we tend to cover are about coming out of COVID and sort of how people are thinking about the things that have changed over the last few years and learning loss that may have occurred. But, you know, early on, it was some of the only data that even really existed. You know, it was before official statistics had really had a chance to catch up or anything like that. It was just you know, the thing that gave policymakers the chance to know things about what parents were experiencing and the kinds of things that their students were seeing. So lots has certainly happened on that. The other thing that makes this poll unique, other than sort of how long it's been running, is how we do it, you know, Zaina, because this obviously isn't just something where we're talking to just any old parents, right? So give the audience a sense of how this poll actually is done.
Yeah, so I'll talk about this pathway, for example. So the Past wave was done in April. We finished fielding the eighth wave. It polls K through 12 parents in Massachusetts. It's a representative survey, but we also include oversamples of parents who identify as Black, Latino, and Asian parents because it allows us to look even further into the data by race. So instead of just seeing surface level responses, we can compare certain questions by different racial demographics.
Yeah, and this is something that we've been doing in a lot of our surveys, particularly since 2020, you know, with everything that happened in 2020 over the summer that sort of came from the killing of George Floyd, you know, and all the things that that's changed. The thing that it's really changed in our own world is that not every survey that we do, but a lot of surveys that we do now have these kinds of oversamples. And as you said, it really lets us kind of dig into parent opinion in more detail. And I should also note that this is not only polls, right? There's a lot more that actually goes into this entire research effort.
Yeah. So something we do for these education polls is focus groups. And often we do them prior to the poll. So in February, we did three focus groups of parents across the state. Two were done in English. And this was our first one on this project that we did among parents who were Spanish speakers. And the focus groups really allow us to do two things: dive deeper on topics we want to hear more qualitative responses on, but it also allows us to inform the poll. And that's actually what happened for this survey wave. Not only the focus groups done in February, but also the ones done last summer, we heard from parents a lot about security and safety. Parents were talking about bullying. They were talking about their kids being afraid of security issues, both in terms of violence and external security issues happening at schools. And then parents were also talking about extracurriculars and how there was a lack of extracurriculars during the pandemic and how there's a need for more extracurriculars so their kids can get back into other social or academic activities outside of the classroom. And that really informed two huge sections that we asked about in this past poll.
And we should give a huge shout out to EdTrust, our partners at EdTrust, who we work with very closely on this poll series, and also to the Barr Foundation, whose funding makes all of this possible. So then let's get into those key findings. You highlighted a couple of the topics that we included in the survey. So let's start out with those. Let's start off with some of the findings from this most recent survey specific to safety, and then we'll talk a bit about extracurriculars.
In terms of safety, something that came up with bullying in particular, we saw that about 28% of parents were saying this school year that their child was bullied. That's 28%. And then when we look deeper into who is more likely to say their child is bullied, we heard from Black parents that their child was more likely to be bullied this year. We heard from parents of children who are on an IEP and parents of children who receive English language learner services more likely to say they were being bullied this year. And I mean, that says something. Issues around safety go beyond bullying. Parents talked about increases in lockdowns or evacuations, particularly among children who are in older grade levels. We also heard about violence and concerns about violence in schools. We also asked parents about the presence of student resource officers or police officers in school. And overall, they made parents and children feel safe. But we also asked about alternative approaches, things like restorative justice. And what's interesting is there was a huge amount of parents that did not know if there were alternative approaches in school. And I think that's critical information given discussion about alternative approaches. But that's kind of the main topics we covered in terms of safety.
What was interesting to me too about the safety issue is the influence that these have on how parents are viewing school overall. You know, we asked the question, just how would you grade your child's school? And there's a very close link between how schools are graded and, well, a range of things, but safety is one of them. You know, if you feel like your child's not safe at school, if you think your child's being bullied at school, those things are both associated with much lower grades for the school overall. So were other things, honestly, also extracurriculars, you know, the presence or absence of extracurriculars, the presence or absence of mental health services for kids who need it. All of these things kind of fed into the overall grades that parents were giving their schools. So that was interesting to me because, you know, sometimes we just talk about schools as academics, you know, and school quality as academics, but it was just so clear looking at the data that parents are taking a whole bunch more things into account, including safety, like you said. So, okay, moving beyond safety, you also mentioned extracurriculars as something that the focus groups mentioned, and that's a topic we put in because of those focus groups. So what did the survey find there?
Yeah. So in terms of extracurriculars, parents overall want more extracurriculars. But what we found is parents of color in particular were less likely to say that their child's school has the same amount of extracurriculars as they did pre-COVID. And those same parents want more extracurriculars, as do all of them. But it really stood out that parents of color were saying that there were less.
And then another topic that the survey touched on that I just mentioned very briefly, of course, is mental health. And this is something that we've been asking about for a while, and other surveys have been documenting, you know, the child mental health crisis going back much longer than this and sort of how it's been growing. So what were some of the details about what this specific survey found on that topic?
Yeah, Steve. So as you mentioned, we've been asking a trend question about mental health concern. And even though we're seeing a decline in concern from February of 2021, there's still about 45% of parents concerned about their child's mental health. That's not a small number. But the biggest surprise on this survey is of parents who are very concerned about their child's mental health, over 40% do not think that their child's school has enough mental health resources to help those who need it. And that's huge, especially because they're saying their kids are, they're very concerned about their child's mental health. And as concern dwindled, so did those saying that there was a lack of resources. One other interesting part of this is of those parents who are very concerned about their child's mental health, 10% also don't know if their child's school has enough resources to help those who need it. So 43% say there aren't enough resources and 10% say they're not sure. And in this case, a don't know answer is really important because it is telling us something.
Absolutely. It's parents who are concerned and then just aren't sure if the school can help. So certainly a lot to think about there for policymakers and people who are responsible for sort of dealing with these things. We did have an event this week where the Lieutenant Governor gave some remarks. So let's just quickly hear a little bit about what she had to say on these topics.
We have a lot of smart, caring adults who come to work every single day trying to make sure there's a light bulb going off, going above ahead of a student. And that is something that, you know, is shown in this survey. The good grades that most parents continue to give their children's schools account for the caring and dedicated educators we have working across 351 cities and towns. You know, I think we have a chance to really regroup and reimagine what a successful and thriving school environment looks like. We did learn a lot during the pandemic. We learned that when we had to do something, we could. We pivoted completely to making sure every child had, you know, a Chromebook in their hand and all of our curriculum was available. And it wasn't perfect, it was pretty messy, but we did it. And so if we can do that because we had to, I know that our schools and our school leaders and our parents and our students can come together to think about how they can regroup and reimagine how we better serve all kids. I was struck by the bullying data that nearly 30% of our parents reported, you know, still having a child experiencing bullying in schools, even though there's been years of us having anti-bullying curriculum. How do we just not have curriculum, but build that into the culture when there's so much division happening in the outside world of our schools? Really critical point for us to think about as adults and school leaders.
A big thank you to Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll for attending the event and for her remarks on all of this. You can find a video of her remarks in the entire event, as well as top lines and crosstabs and a press release for the survey at our website at massingpolling.com. All right, Zaina, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to walk us through the survey.
Thanks, Steve. No problem. Thanks for having me today.
All right, well, on to our second survey. We have Olivia back with us. And as we mentioned earlier, it wasn't all about education for us here at MPG this week. We also have new info about parents in Massachusetts and their concerns about the COVID vaccine. So, Olivia, tell us about this survey.
Well, Steve, we surveyed over 1,300 parents in Massachusetts, parents of children ages 6 months to 17 years. And in this one, just like Zaina said that they did in the education poll, we did do over samples of Black, Latino, and Asian parents. And we did these in English and in Spanish.
So, Olivia, tell us a bit about where the survey actually came from.
Yeah, this project was funded by the state of Massachusetts via the Massachusetts Bureau of Infectious Diseases and Laboratory Sciences. Alan Geller also provided an incredible amount of input and support with the analysis. And Alan is a professor at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health.
So then let's get into what the actual findings were, because of course, one of the reasons that the survey exists is that childhood vaccination rates have sort of stalled, you know, particularly among very young children. You know, people might recall that vaccine eligibility rolled out in phases where you sort of had teenagers could get it, and then it was 5 to 11s, and then it was people under 5, you know, 6 months to under 5. And the net result of that was that younger children are much, much less likely to be vaccinated than our older children. And the idea behind the survey was basically to find out, well, why is that and what could potentially be done about it? So Olivia, give us a sense of what some of the hesitations are that parents are expressing at this point.
Well, I think the two biggest things we're seeing for children under 5 are that parents are seeing the vaccine as more risky for younger children. 40% say they're very risky or somewhat risky for children under 5, and only 27% say the same for children aged 12 through 17. So people are concerned about vaccinating their young ones. But also we're seeing that more than half of parents are at least somewhat concerned about side effects, both short-term and long-term, with 58% saying they're concerned about short-term and 61% saying they're concerned about long-term. And this includes a majority of many different demographic groups.
And I should pause here and suggest that people head over to GBH News and listen to the interview that Alan and I both did, where he described in some detail that these concerns aren't well-founded. You know, this is not a matter of opinion. This is a matter of science. And he kind of went into what's been found on this, just so we don't leave it with the impression that public opinion is what influences whether or not side effects exist, even though there definitely are, Olivia, as you said, there definitely are widespread concerns about side effects. And that clearly is the main thing that's keeping parents from vaccinating their kids in higher numbers at this point. So what else did the survey find, Olivia?
Well, as far as those demographic groups go, those that are the most concerned about long-term side effects are parents who are Black, with 73% expressing concerns, Latino parents with 72% expressing concerns, Republicans with 79% expressing concerns, and also those without a college degree. But another huge finding of this is that pediatricians are playing a key role in addressing concerns about side effects and further boosting pediatric vaccination rates.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, when we look at the differences by parents who were recommended the vaccine and given enough information, and those who weren't recommended the vaccine at all, or those who were recommended the vaccine but didn't receive enough information, those that were recommended and said that they did receive enough information were much less likely to be concerned about side effects and much more likely to get their children vaccinated.
And then one other thing we need to mention, of course, is partisanship, because pretty much since the beginning of the pandemic, whether it was how people reacted to COVID itself or how people approached the vaccine, party has been a huge, huge factor. So what did the poll find on that front?
Well, Steve, we're finding that trust in routine vaccines, not just the COVID vaccine, but all routine vaccines, varies significantly by political party. We're also seeing that whether or not people think that the vaccine is effective varies by political party, as well as concern about both long-term and short-term effects. And finally, we're seeing a very big difference in party ID for who thinks that the COVID pandemic is over. Only 28% of people who are Democrats think that it's over, which I think is still kind of high. But we see actually that 61% of folks that are Republican think it's over. And right in the middle, 47% of folks who identify as independent are saying that they think that the pandemic is over.
Yeah, definitely big gaps all around. And you noted very interestingly that, you know, trust in other vaccines is also starting to show party gaps, which of course kind of gives us the shape of what may be to come, you know, because of course COVID's not the only thing we're ever going to try to vaccinate against. We've got, you know, talk of an RSV vaccine coming out and other, you know, kind of future public health efforts could be impacted by how the debate over the COVID vaccine happen. And one of the things that we saw early on in the COVID pandemic was that getting your kids vaccinated was just too hard to find appointments, too hard to get there. So the survey also dug into that and whether that's still an issue. Where are things on that front right now?
Well, we're finding that logistical barriers to COVID vaccines are much less important now than they used to be. 90% are saying it would be very or somewhat easy to find an appointment close to home. So I really think that what we're looking at here are barriers that are about personal belief. It's not accessibility to the vaccine that's stopping people from getting their children vaccinated.
All right, Olivia, thank you so much for joining us and walking us through the key findings.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, that is all the time we have today for this polling spectacular. Thanks so much to my colleagues, Olivia Wine and Zana Basma, for joining us. I'm Steve Cazella. Lisa Kaczynski and Jennifer Smith will be back with me next week. Our producer, as always, is Adam Boyaji. Don't forget to give The Horse Race a review wherever you're hearing us now. Subscribe to the Massachusetts Politico Playbook and Commonwealth Magazine's Daily Download. And reach out to us here at the Massing Polling Group if you need polls or focus groups done. For now, thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week.